Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have three martinis today. None of them, of course, are good. And as you might expect, all of them are related to the horrific events of very early Sunday morning. Now confirmed 49 people dead, 53 people injured, after a radical Islamic extremist who pledged allegiance to ISIS in the midst of the attack at this gay nightclub opened fire, making it the worst and deadliest mass shooting in American history. 49 American citizens, we think, most of them certainly American citizens, murdered as a result of this jihadist. And there's a couple of different angles we're going to be looking at today, starting with the president's comments early Sunday afternoon. Two clips here. Jim, here's the one that a lot of people on the right are bristling over, and for very good reason. By the time the president took the podium, we knew about the Pledge of Allegiance to ISIS. We knew about other ties to radical Islam, yet the president said this.
We are still learning all the facts. This is an open investigation. We've reached no definitive judgment on the precise motivations of the killer.
So that narrative continues that the president won't address the actual problem here. But you point out in today's Morning Jolt perhaps something even more troubling that the president said as he urged prayers for the victims and their families. He also asked Americans to pray for themselves to change. But here's how he phrased that.
Say a prayer for them and say a prayer for their families. That God give them the strength to bear the unbearable. And that he give us all the strength to be there for them and the strength and courage to change. We need to demonstrate that we are defined more as a country by the way they live their lives than by the hate of the man who took them from us.
So, Jim, the implication being that we need to change so we identify more with the victims than the perpetrator, the implication to that being that right now we identify somehow more with the perpetrator.
Yeah, I'm going to take this kind of step by step here, Greg. That first of all, the first comment of the president about, well, we don't know the precise motivation, it really starts to feel like willful denial. And I'll take us back just a couple of months at the San Bernardino shooting. You know, listeners probably remember that for the first day of coverage of that shooting, it was like, was this workplace violence? What caused them to do that? And we pointed out, like, man, there were reports of pipe bombs being there. That didn't sound like your routine, you know, they took my red Steamline stapler workplace dispute. It's, you know, it sounded really extreme there. And then by the next day, as soon as you heard the name, everyone said, oh, okay, Muslim sounding name. This looks like it might be jihadism. We were told, no, don't jump to conclusions. Don't jump to conclusions. And then within like 24 hours, it had become, well, maybe it's Islamist attack, but also workplace violence. Something made him target his coworkers. Maybe it stems from that. And then finally, within a couple of days, it was very clear. No, these folks were ISIS. These folks were radicalized. These folks were indisputably acting in the name of jihadist Islamist ideology. Here we go again. And by this point, you know, when you mentioned it correctly, Greg, we'd heard from the police chief about him pledging loyalty to ISIS on that. Now, understand in the opening hours of a terrible event like this, the, we might call it the fog of war, there's a lot of confusion, a lot of misinformation, false reports going around. But Greg, we have to assume by at that point, if we're hearing from the police chief that the shooter had pledged himself to ISIS, that the president of the United States has heard of it. So when he goes out and says, well, look, we just don't know the precise motivation yet, it really begins to look and sound like willful blindness, that he doesn't want to acknowledge this. He wants to leave that door open for a possibility of some other motivation. And this importance and insistence of this was a crime of terror and a crime of hate, you know. Some of us think that's kind of redundant. You don't see a lot of loving terror out there. But then the second part, which really kind of stuck in my craw, ironically, it was before Obama spoke. You heard a lot of, you know, we all have to look into our hearts and see what we can do. No! Greg, you were sleeping that night. I was sleeping that night. Most of us have nothing to do with this. We've never seen it. Do you know what? Who needed to do something differently? The shooter. All right. Sounds like even his coworker was reporting him to his employers and saying, this guy sounds dangerous. The ex-wife said that she was beating him and seemed extreme. His dad was praising the Taliban. How many giant red flags did we need? Stop casting, you know, a grand, broad societal blame over this. What is it going to take for us to get a legitimate focus on who actually did it here? It's as if when something like this happened, there's this adamant insistence that we have to find somebody else to blame besides the person who did it. And, you know, maybe that's a good segue to our second martini, Greg.
One of the things that we saw from both presidential nominees to be is unfortunately what we've come to expect from them. Hillary Clinton going on Twitter yesterday saying, quote, "We need to keep guns like the ones used last night out of the hands of terrorists or other violent criminals." Earlier today on the Today Show, after a very leading question from Savannah Guthrie about why can't we just get some common sense gun legislation, Hillary says this.
"And we need to get these weapons of war off the streets. We had an assault weapons ban. It expired. And we need to reinstate it."
And then she also says on Twitter, "We cannot demonize, demagogue, and declare war on an entire religion. Hate is not the answer to hate." So watch your fire marshal warnings today. There's a lot of straw men going on there. Trump yesterday, after his initial tweet saying it was horrific and praying for the victims and their family, says, "When will we get tough, smart, and vigilant?" But just shortly after that says, "Appreciate the congrats for being right on radical Islamic terrorism. I don't want congrats. I want toughness and vigilance. We must be smart." So knee-jerk reactions from Hillary and a self-congratulatory told-you-so pat on the back from Donald Trump.
The gun control move, this is the second time, because if you recall, right after San Bernardino, President Obama went out and said, "This illustrates our need for more gun control." This is not a gun control problem, Greg. This is a terrorism problem, right? This is like saying that we need plane control after 9/11. I guess I should look back and realize, I went back and I checked, they did call for gun control, Democrats and the left, after the Oklahoma City bombing. So you can commit a terrible act of terrorism with something besides a gun, and they will still believe that gun control is the solution there. On Trump, I don't want congratulations. This isn't about you. Good heavens. Right. You know, here we have a moment in which a lot of arguments from the right about the dangers of radicalization in Muslim communities, about the inadequacy of our domestic security, that we've spent a lot of time chasing down what seemed like, you know, nothing threats, and other folks get waved right through. I mean, here's the thing. In the last couple of years, the FBI talked to the older brother bomber up in Boston, cleared him, no threat there. The wife shooter in San Bernardino got through counterterrorism screening through DHS as she was entering the country. No issues there. And now we find out the FBI has talked to this guy three times. There is a fairly clear issue here of the government, which says we're going to protect you, isn't protecting us. Now, we can argue about what is this stemming from, a concern about stepping on the toes and you know, irritating Muslim sensibilities, or getting a lawsuit from the Council on American Islamic Relations. We don't know. You know, we can ask why this is. We now have a series of events in which the government goes, has somebody on a watch list, and we can't get any good answers about what actually gets you on the watch list, how many people are on the watch list, how many Americans who have nothing to do with anything are getting swept up in this. For some reason, the government looks at these people. They interview them, they talk to them, and they walk away saying, "Nope, this person's not a threat." And then they go out and commit a terrible act of terror, right? This is not a system that's working, and this is something we should be able to have a really serious discussion about. But instead, you know, now apparently this morning Donald Trump is saying, "Well, you know, either Obama doesn't get this, or he gets it better than anybody understands," which seems to imply Obama's rooting for the terrorists, or Obama's pro-terrorism, or something like that. It's just, you know, he managed to say the exact wrong thing at a time when so many things should be having this administration, you know, be forced to justify a bunch of policies that aren't working. But he's going to manage to make it about himself again. So chatting with the NR editors today, this you know, we have a lot of depressing days in the news, but this one seems like I found so many new facets of depressing, depressing aspects.
We kind of meshed martinis two and three there. One is that the government, amazingly, on some respects, is able to find trails and threads on these people, but still can't apparently close the deal when they actually investigate them. And then the other thing, of course, is that both of these presidential candidates simply can't get their act together when it comes to a moment of national crisis. And in addition to actually having solid policies, one of the things you want in a commander-in-chief is somebody who understands the moment and responds to the moment in a responsible way. We don't see that from the current guy on the job, and there's little reason to think that either of the person most likely to replace him is any more prepared to handle that aspect of the job or to seriously understand the threat and deal with it in a major way.
Yeah, there's a common thread running through all of our martinis today, and probably kind of the thoughts going through the country on a day like this. We have a serious problem in this country. We have ISIS, which wants to kill us. And yes, a good portion of the threat of ISIS comes from overseas, that group that the president dismissed as a JV team, right? And they wanted to go. We do need to deal with them there. If you give ISIS this endless ability to develop and train, develop its own people, train its own people. People come there, they come train, they go back to their home countries, they destabilize the region, you cause a refugee crisis up north through Turkey and into Europe. You see all the problems from that. But we also have a problem right here in the United States. This shooter was apparently born in the United States and raised here. There's no reason for him to suddenly say, hey, I'm going to go out and shoot as many gay people or as many infidels as possible today because I want to get 72 virgins in the afterlife. But he did think that. And it's not, you know, we have a situation where we actually people are radicalizing. And it's coming from the internet. Is it coming from their mosque? Apparently somebody who went to his mosque went over and became the first American suicide bomber over in Syria. This is one of the things that prompted the FBI to talk to this guy. Clearly, there was just enough reason for the FBI to look at this guy three times. I'm left scratching my head, Greg, because I'm like, to most Americans, that seems like a lot. I would bet a lot of money, Greg, that you've never been picked up by the FBI and interviewed about any terrorist connections. And if you do, this might be our last podcast.
Zero is right? The correct answer. I'm guessing the same is true for you.
For almost everybody, talking to the FBI almost never happens unless you're Hillary Clinton. but otherwise, most of you, like that seems really weird, right? Why would your name keep coming up in connection to this? And each time the FBI was like, nah, this guy seems all right. Clearly he's not all right. You could talk to the ex-wife. You could talk to the coworkers. You know, you could look at the videos of the dad. Stuff is mounting that there was something a little bit off about this guy. And they all described him as having this violent temper. So, and yet, you know, this one, oh, how my goodness. How could we ever know this was going to happen? And my suspicion is that in the coming days and weeks, we're going to see both the Obama administration and the Hillary Clinton campaign looking at everything possible. Guns and homophobia and all these things, everything possible except what did our government do to try to prevent this? Because it clearly wasn't enough. And it's just this utterly exasperating point that they basically, we have another case of the government failing to do its job and the blame is going to be cast on the American people. Happy Monday, everybody.
Yeah, hard to start off the week with a more horrific, more depressing story, but obviously it's where the country's mind and thoughts and prayers are as we go forward through the rest of the week. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Please tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.